Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it's the weekly worldview, ladies and gentlemen. It's the first word in broadcast talk radio, which I don't care if it's a podcast. It's broadcast as far as I'm concerned. The kids don't know the difference. We're the first word on the first day of the week. And this is the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you get on with the week. That's it, right? That's it. And now, you know, folks, we do a lot of bad news here. A lot of depressing news, a lot of collapse and of Western civilization type news, the decline, the fall, and all of that. And it can be depressing, and I don't want to be depressing, especially now that we're in the holiday season. We're there, folks. We're at the Tractor Supply today, and they were playing Christmas carols. So that's it. When Tractor Supply is belting out the Christmas carols, you know it's the holiday season. So happy holidays to all of you out there. That was a Harry Carey. That sounded like Harry. Happy holidays, Chicago. Happy holidays. Go Cubs. But I want to start out with something uplifting here in this holiday season. And for that, we go to Somalia. How often do you hear that? Let's do an uplifting story. Dateline Somalia. Almost never do you hear that. But last week, American airstrikes killed at least 50 jihadis in Somalia. That's right, annihilating certain members, as many as we could bomb, of Al-Shabaab. You remember Al-Shabaab? They're an affiliate of Al-Qaeda, and they're associated with Al-Qaeda and Boko Haram and all the other Islamist maniacs. And we bombed 50 of them. All the way to hell last week. And so that's a nice way to start the week because 50 Al-Qaeda are dead. You know, but then you stop and think about why is there still Al-Qaeda? What's going on with all this? Why are we still having to bomb Al-Shabaab in Somalia? Well, I think I can see what's happening here. 17 years after 9/11... we still haven't finished the war against the Islamists. And I think we're just overthinking this one, guys. I think we're overthinking it. Listen to this statement that was released from AFRICOM. That's the U.S. military. They released an announcement after the announcement of the airstrikes killing the 50 jihadis. Here's what they had to say. AFRICOM announced the following, quote, "The desired end state in East Africa is one in which terrorist organizations cannot destabilize Somalia and its neighboring states, nor threaten the interests of the U.S. and its international allies in the region." Unquote. Okay, it's a bit verbose, number one. And couldn't we simplify it? The desired end state in East Africa is the annihilation of Al-Shabaab. I mean, you could just stop right there, but if you wanted to use a few more words, I understand bureaucrats. You know, you're trying to make yourself useful. So, how about the annihilation of Al-Shabaab and all terrorist organizations like it, and a free and prosperous Somalia governed in Christian love? Oh no, that last part you could never put in there, but we could hope for that, and we could start by annihilating Al-Shabaab and all terrorist organizations like it. But instead, we're working on measures to degrade so that they cannot destabilize or threaten various interests. And, so I think we're overthinking it. I mean, where is Winston Churchill when you need him? It's just ridiculous. 17 years later, we can't defeat some of the most backwards maniacs on the planet. Are you kidding me? We're the greatest military force in the history of all humanity, as far as I know. And here we are 17 years later chasing these nut jobs through the jungle with bombers. It's crazy. And it's because we, well, anyway, let's just move on. I don't need to beat a dead Somali terrorist to death. Although, you know, I could be all right. Let's move deeper into some of the darkest recesses of the politics file ever to be crawled into and gotten all over you. And then we're going to talk about Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is running for Speaker of the House because the Democrats took back the House. Now, I don't want to depress all my Republican friends. I know that you're just now managing to come out of your funk because you drank Rush Limbaugh's Kool-Aid. You watched Sean Hannity and you thought the Republicans, well, I think we can hold the House. I think. And the Democrats took the House and thumped the Republicans. Spanked them is what happened there on Election Day. 40 seats so far. And the Democrats are working on stealing a couple of more. But Nancy Pelosi, just picture that, her with that giant gavel. I know, it's terrifying, but there it is, right? Nancy Pelosi is running, and Marcia Fudge, she's a Democrat from Ohio. She spells her last name F-U-D-G-E, and she went into life as a public figure without changing that, which I don't understand. But it's not her fault that her name's Marcia Fudge, okay? So let's just move on. Stop being so childish. Democrat Marcia Fudge, she mounted something of a rebellion against Nancy Pelosi, along with some other young insurgent socialist maniacs and homosexuals and freaks. She floated the idea amongst them and others of potentially running against Nancy Pelosi for the speakership, according to this article I have right here that I downloaded from Breitbart. Not only did she say she might run against her, she attacked Pelosi as an elitist, as a very wealthy person. Oh, that doesn't go over well in the Democrat Party. She called Nancy Pelosi out of touch. She said her breath smells, her ankles are fat. No, she didn't say all that. But she did threaten. She signed a letter, as a matter of fact. With great fanfare, Representative Marcia Fudge of Ohio signed a letter back in January pledging to vote against Nancy Pelosi. And there's been stories in the right-wing media from Limbaugh right all the way down to the bottom. Who's the bottom? The very bottom would be Michael Medved, I think, of the talk radio conservative world food chain. Rush Limbaugh's the head of the snake. And Michael Medved is the other end. Michael Medved, you remember him? He's got a radio show.
Yeah, there's another one.
Well, there's several. Dennis Prager would be just...
No, there's another one.
Prager's actually all right, though. I like Dennis Prager a little better than... Well, don't get me distracted now. I need to stay on topic here. Marcia Fudge. So she made all this noise, and then suddenly... A letter that she signed back in 2015 without so much fanfare, talking about how great a particular judge was right before he was convicted of beating his wife. Ooh, that's embarrassing. So he was on trial for beating his wife. She wrote a letter saying he was a great guy. And then he was convicted of beating his wife. And then this week, he killed her. Somebody killed her. And so Marcia's letter looks particularly embarrassing. Not only was he on trial for beating her, well, now she's dead for whatever reason. We don't know who killed her, but the judge who beat on her, well, they're looking for him. And so now the letter comes back into view, this letter that Marcia Fudge signed saying what a great guy. And so now, all of a sudden, yada, 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 fast forward 5 seconds, and in the wake of this development, Marcia Fudge has dropped all opposition to Ms. Pelosi and is considering Pelosi's offer of a subcommittee chairmanship. And now she's endorsing Nancy Pelosi, as a matter of fact. And she will be voting for Nancy Pelosi, who will be the next Speaker of the House, and don't get too depressed about it. It's just the way it is in politics. Because anything but the status quo is rare in Democrat politics. And I mean Democrat with a big D, Democrat with a little D, however you want to look at it. When it comes to people voting, when it comes to the masses voting, anything but the status quo or what's expected is rare. And so the Democrats took the House, despite Sean Hannity I think Sean Hannity chained himself to Donald Trump for the last, 3 weeks of the election cycle. Rush Limbaugh opened for the president in Cape Girardeau, and despite all that, the Democrats took the House. And so, because that's just the way it goes, that's the way it is. These people play dirty hardball. They're going to steal a couple more seats. They might steal another Senate seat because that's the way things are. But don't be depressed, those of you who are conservatives at least. And I don't know how many of us there are left. I think there are a few. I talked to a few this morning, so I know they still exist. We should be positive. There's a word I'm looking for that means being positive, but I can't think of it because I don't know why. Isn't that embarrassing when you're on the air and you can't think of a word that's really obvious? We should be optimistic, is what I meant to say. But I don't know. I think technology is ruining my brain. Anyway, that's beside the point. My brain is not ruined enough to recognize that maybe now Donald Trump and the Republicans might be forced to act like conservatives, you know, like they used to before Trump. Back when they used to at least act like and give lip service to conservatism, and once in a while, because they were doing that, they would stumble backward into doing right upon occasion. You know, just as a byproduct of their feigned opposition to liberalism, which it's feigned because the Republicans are not actually opposed to liberalism, they're actually opposed to Democrats. If there's one thing I've learned in my 25 years or so observing politics, it's that Republicans, well, Republicans are not necessarily conservatives, and Republicans are opposed not to liberalism, but to Democrats. That's it. So there, have I made that point? I believe I have. All right. So chin up, my conservative Republican friends, because we got them right where we want them. We're winning. Now that's sarcasm. All right. Now, let's move deeper into the politics file, into an even darker recess of the politics file, where it would almost be as if there were a festering boil in this dark corner that we're about to open up here in the politics file. I have Fox News. There was an incident on Fox News this past week. Now, if you people have been observing what's been happening over the last couple years, especially, it's become very dangerous to make jokes, to use analogies. It's become very dangerous to insult some people because you could lose your career. If you say something a little off color, something that could be maybe perceived as something maybe possibly, your career could be over. And so an example on Fox News last week, Fox News, now there's a show on with an anchor called Rick Leventhal. I'm not sure who this guy is, but he was on Fox. He's an anchor. And there was another lady on, one of their commentators, their incessant commentators, an incessant parade of barely tolerable. Anyway, she's on the show. They're talking about Hillary Clinton. Rick Leventhal says he was amazed at Hillary's ability to stay in the news. At which point, Anna Paulina said, yeah, she won't go away. She's like herpes. And everybody freaked out. Rick Leventhal immediately stopped everything and said, that was not appropriate. Paulina herself was stricken from the air immediately without warning. And then later on, after another segment, he came back on and Leventhal had to apologize again. That this rather astute Anna Paulina compared Hillary to herpes. Folks, I get it. Do you not get the joke? Herpes is a recurring event. It's an infection that builds a sense of dread into those poor people who suffer from it. So how could that not, how do you not get that? Anyway, folks, is analogy now a politically correct sin? Is that where we are now? I don't get, folks, we here at the Weekly Worldview have never compared Hillary to herpes. Never. Now, here at the Weekly Worldview, I think you know how we feel about that kind of talk. She's got the gentlemen, that's right. Welcome back to the show where we're not afraid to make appropriate comparisons that may be humorous once in a while. Anyway, they can't take my career away from me, at least not this one. I can't lose my career, so I guess I'm not afraid. I suppose if I was on Fox and this was how I made my living, but I'm not, and nor shall I be, nor would I. Let's go instead. We're going to climb up from the dark, festering, pustule-laden pockets of the politics file, up a little higher, and we're going to talk about Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. Well, there was a leak from the CIA last week. A leak, I said, saying that there was a phone call that was recorded that recorded Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman giving instructions to, quote, silence Jamal Khashoggi as soon as possible, unquote. And we're not sure if that, was that actually from the tape right there? Hey, rewind that. Silence Jamal Khashoggi as soon as possible, unquote. So there's a rumor, the Telegraph out of London says Gina Haspel, the CIA director, leaked this. So that's a pretty big leak when the CIA director leaks it. Okay, that should be earth-shattering news in Washington. I don't understand why it's not. Anyway, so the CIA director herself is said to have revealed the existence of this wiretapped call. It's just unbelievable. So first of all, if there is evidence that Gina Haspel actually leaked this, she should be fired and then arrested, and she should be charged. She should be in jail tonight. You know, it's astonishing how, well, there's several things that are astonishing. Number one, the president is surrounded by people who hate him and want him out of office, which is why I predict he's going to be impeached, and it's going to happen because the Republicans want it to happen. They are so mad at him for just embarrassing them. Let's just get it out there. These people work their whole lives. They're relatively dim-witted. Most of them are extremely unattractive people. And they've worked their whole life to get to where, say, Gina Haspel is. She's a mid-level bureaucrat of relatively little skill and intellect. And she's managed somehow to claw her way to the top. She's now the director of the CIA or wherever she was before Trump came along. Let's think about all these politicians before Trump came along, working their whole lives to claw their way to the top. And here comes Trump, and in 5 minutes, with relatively little effort, makes them all look like complete idiots. Defeats all of them, embarrasses all of them, makes them all feel inadequate and foolish. And they hate his guts. And it's more Republicans than Democrats, trust me. The Republicans want blood. Okay, so It's amazing that your own CIA director leaks something that's harmful against, and now it's as if Trump can't fire her because he'll probably be called a sexist, and it's just we're in a very, very weird and strange time. And here's the thing about the Khashoggi thing, okay? So another thing that's astonishing, besides the fact that all of Trump's friends are his enemies, it's astonishing how brazenly Trump just admits that he's willing to overlook a murder for financial gain, which is what he came out and said. This past week, he said, look, I'm not going to ruin the economy. We got jobs. Tens of thousands of jobs rely on our Saudi brothers. And so they killed a guy. Yeah. So anyway, I've always left open the possibility to the Crown Prince, the possibility that he could claim that this was a political assassination and it was an operation carried out against a known member of the Muslim Brotherhood, an operative, that there was a threat against the government of Saudi Arabia, and we had to kill him. End of conversation. People might not like it. They might be upset about it, but at least it's something that we could all understand because Jamal Khashoggi, while he's been portrayed as just this innocent, golden-hearted journalist out to save democracy, he's a Muslim Brotherhood operative. He works with and communicates on a regular basis with Islamist terrorists. He's a dangerous guy who there's probably half a dozen reasons you could pull out of your pocket to assassinate Jamal Khashoggi. But Donald Trump is just too, he's too amoral. He doesn't really understand. He's like, look, it's jobs. So the guy got killed. Big deal. Well, Mr. President, so here we are. Donald Trump is basically going to say, I'm not going to believe that my friend Mohammed bin whatever. I'm just not going to believe he had anything to do with it. So he's forcing the hand of his enemies. They leak stuff like this. And it seems to me that the amateur crown prince didn't handle the situation properly. And he's simply going to lie in the face of our amateur president, who in return is going to blatantly make financial prosperity an excuse for turning a blind eye to murder. Because look, if this wasn't a political assassination, because the guy's a Muslim Brotherhood threat to the crown, then it's just murder. That's all. And I think that the former is the case, but for whatever reason, they're bozos. The world is being run by ignorant amateur children at this point. Mohammed bin Salman is one. Donald Trump is another. And so here's the bigger picture on this, is that Donald Trump is bringing out into the open shameful things that politicians did and agreed to that were once only whispered between despots and monarchs. And he's making this idea that we can overlook murder for financial gain. He's making that the new public standard. You know, I think that history will judge that Donald Trump has done more than Howard Stern to degrade and defile the American culture, the body politic. He's a foul and vulgar man of the people. And he's relatively, I'm just going to leave it at that. Donald Trump. So I'm sorry. All right, let's move on. I know you're mad at me now. I apologize. I know I'm supposed to get the red hat. I know. Let's go into the war file. All right. Let's go back to a time when we didn't overlook murder just because it was difficult or there was financial issues and there was interest and this and that. We go to Berlin where the Associated Press reports that a former Nazi concentration camp who served at Stutthof, Johann Rebogen, They've put him on trial because he oversaw the murder of thousands of innocent people. And even though it's uncomfortable and difficult, and nobody really wants to hear about it anymore, we don't want to make the Germans feel bad about it anymore. But in Germany, there was a new law that basically said if we don't convict these Nazis soon, they're basically going to, we're just ready to move on. And so a number of prosecutions have taken place. This Rabogan from Stutthof is on trial. There's another on trial. By the way, this fellow, Rabogan, is 94 years old. There's another guard from Mauthausen who's 95 years old. He's gone on trial as well. He's accused as an accessory to 36,000 murders. And so, you know, there was a time, and we're coming to the end of the envelope. There was a time when the adults running the world made the difficult decisions, even though they were difficult. You put a 95-year-old great-great-grandfather on trial, really, for something that happened 70 years ago? Yes, we do. Because we don't overlook the murder of innocent people. No matter how far long ago it was, no matter how difficult it is to prove, no matter how uncomfortable we all feel about it. But the adults in the room are all dying off, apparently. And we're being overtaken by idiot children. And that's why, as I read this story, I wondered to myself, will the operators of the modern day killing centers here in America, far more efficient than anything the Nazis ever came up with, much cleaner, much more environmentally friendly, much more socially acceptable, Planned Parenthood and all the freestanding abortion clinics around the country, the little independent mom-and-pop abortion clinics, the giant, massive killing centers at Planned Parenthood. Will any of those people ever go on trial for what they've done? Well, it's getting harder and harder to imagine that day. I used to visualize that day in my mind. I don't know. I guess one would almost have to conclude that there would need to be a war first. Because let's face it, folks, had the Nazis not been annihilated, these two guards wouldn't be on trial. The Nazis would be running the world and everybody would be good with it. These guys would probably get a medal. So I guess there would have to be a war first. I don't know. I don't want there to be a war. You know, but how else would you get a victor to implement justice? I don't know. So these guys are going on trial. These 95-year-old murderers are going on trial, and I support that. No matter how much it costs, no matter how difficult it is. But it doesn't appear that there's any mechanism at hand that could bring the modern-day abortionists and the millions, the tens of millions, the hundreds of millions of people murdered. What would bring justice to them? I just don't see anything. But, you know, folks, with God, all things are possible. So we don't give up hope. But it doesn't look... Well, let's move on. Let's go instead to the Mark of the Beast file. Yes, the Mark of the Beast, I said. So I believe the Mark of the Beast is real. I do. And I know a lot of people think that, oh, you're a Christian superstitious weirdo freak. You think the Mark of the Beast is real. All right, well, get this. In Beijing, China, they will assign citizens and businesses personal trustworthiness points by 2021. It's their big plan for a social credit system, and it'll be based on, it'll measure various things about you, your financial credit, your personal behavior, any crimes you commit, any things you say that are considered socially unacceptable, like, I don't know, comparing Hillary to herpes, something like that. So the social credit system has been launched by the godless Chinese. And this is the system that I believe is going to be set up that eventually will exclude people from commerce. In China already, if you don't get a good social credit score in China, there's things you can't buy. There's places you can't go. And that's just the start of the system that they've set up. These godless heathens are going to set up a system to decide who's good and who's trustworthy and who's right. And that that's the mark of the beast. If you don't knuckle under and say what they expect you to say and toe the line, you're not going to be able to buy and sell. Experts, according to Reuters, experts say that the social credit system could help tackle social problems like fraud. Well, don't we already have a criminal justice system for that? Why do we need a social credit system? Don't we already have in America a criminal justice system that... Oh, no, that's right. We don't. We don't have a criminal justice system anymore. And so what's going to replace the criminal justice system that God inspired? It's going to be replaced by a social credit system. A social credit system administered by godless heathens and communists, weirdos and freaks. Cry. Thank you for sticking with us here at the Weekly Worldview. One of the original podcasts in the history of all podcasts, by the way. So we started in 1998, November of 1998. All right. So, by the way, I don't believe that the Mark of the Beast is an actual physical mark. I don't know if I made that clear. Anyway, the Mark of the Beast is, we'll get back to that later. Let's instead go to the Macy's Day Parade. Let's go to the Macy's Day Parade, for part of the decline and fall file. Macy's Thanksgiving, by the way, folks, if you don't know, it's called Thanksgiving. Whatever I just said there, that does not apply. Thanksgiving. The Macy's Thanksgiving, I can't do it. I'm starting to go dim. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is a tradition that dates back to 1924. I remember when I was a little kid, I watched it. I watched it a number of times, live, right there, right on TV, in black and white. Yes. Little kids watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade along with their mommies and daddies. Normal families do that. This year, the parade, actress Caitlin Kanunen and Isabella McCalla were involved. They are part of a musical. A musical called The Prom, and that was part of the parade. And how do I say this? The two actresses kissed each other in front of God and everybody on live TV nationally in front of all the little kids and their mommies and their daddies and in front of God and everyone. They say it's the first lesbian kiss at the Macy's Day Parade. The first, which obviously means there's going to be more. All right, and so the producers, by the way, they say that the musical The Prom is a story of acceptance, tolerance, and love, and dykes, apparently. Did we mention the dykes? Isn't that implied in acceptance, tolerance, and love? Dykes. They released a statement after the live broadcast, defiling the minds of millions of children and their moms and dads. And the producers released a statement. They said, "We are grateful. We're grateful to Macy's. We're grateful to NBC for their acceptance and inclusivity of a community and a story that's about acceptance, tolerance, and love." Did we mention the Dykes? No, just the tolerance and love. Thank you! That was the producer, Bill. Supporters cheered for the on-screen kiss, as you can well imagine. Some parents expressed concern that the kiss was not age-appropriate for young viewers. Folks, that kind of perversion is not appropriate for anybody to be watching, for crying out loud. Let alone the little kids. What about their mommies and daddies? So there we are, another signpost along the road to hell. The first lesbian kiss at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Married couple kissing.
Married couple? What's that now?
Have you, when you were little, you watched it, right?
What? Married couples kissing? When I was little, I watched my mom and dad would kiss.
No, on the parade.
The parade? I don't think they even had, I don't think anybody kissed anybody at the parade. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they didn't even, yeah, what's this? Well, this, yeah. Anyway, talk about the mark of the beast. So the mark of the beast, if you've taken the mark of the beast, you look at this, it repulses you, and you decide you can't say anything about it for the sake of your career. That's the mark of the beast, okay? Just not to put too fine a point on it. All right, now, let's go directly from there to Sodom and Gomorrah, appropriately enough, into the true history file. Archaeologists have revealed evidence that a civilization in the Dead Sea region was destroyed about 4,000 years ago following a meteor explosion in the atmosphere. Surprise, surprise, surprise! Just like the Bible said! Yes, during the annual meeting of the American Schools of Oriental Research in Denver, scholar Philip Sylvia reported the preliminary findings of excavations in the area that have been going on for over a decade. Over a decade, they've been digging in this area in Jordan, right there by the Red Sea. They estimate about 65,000 people lived in the area, and they were all obliterated in a moment with a powerful wave of heat, wind, and tiny particles. Yeah. And then salty water from the Dead Sea devastated all the soil in the area. They say the shock wave from the meteor's explosion actually pushed the salt and the brine up out of the Dead Sea into the soil and ruined the soil. The formerly very lush soil was ruined for about 700 years. And still to this day, if you've been there, it's a desolate area. You know, people have always laughed at the idea that Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt. They've always thought, "You Christians, or you believe any kind of fairy tale?" Pillar of salt. Well, here we go. All right, so the salty water from the Dead Sea devastated the soil. It not only wiped out 100% of the Middle Bronze Age cities and towns, but also stripped the agricultural soil from the once fertile fields. And if you've been there, around the Dead Sea, there are actually pillars of salt. All right, go look at them. All right, so there we go. And so this was actually featured in the sermon at Denver Bible Church this morning. I'm stealing some of my material from my pastor, but I read this story earlier in the week, and I thought it was a great story to juxtapose to the first deviant kiss there at the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade. There you go. So next year in New York, hey, right? Isn't that the Jews say? Next year in Israel, next year in Jerusalem. I say to all the deviant perverts who want to corrupt our children, next year in New York. How about that? Huh? Yes. What we're hoping for is a powerful wave of heat, wind, and tiny particles. Yes. And you can all get what you deserve, you pile of perverts. All right, now, into the science file we go for a very interesting story on GMOs. How do you feel about GMOs? Well, before you say, listen to this article from The Sun over in Over in the United Kingdom, a genetically modified virus has been developed by British scientists that targets both cancer cells and healthy cells that are tricked into protecting the cancer from the immune system. This virus has been modified genetically to target fibroblasts. Fibroblasts are the most common type of cell in connective tissue, and they can get hijacked by cancer-associated fibroblasts. So the fibroblast that does good because it builds tissue, it can be hijacked to do evil by cancer. Well, they've genetically modified this virus to attack both the cancer cells and the hijacked cells that kind of hide what's going on from the immune system. And so, you know, these hijacked fibroblasts, they help tumors grow and they help the cancer evade the immune system. And so right now, anything we do that kills the fibroblasts that have been hijacked, it may also kill the healthy fibroblasts. And that's why people undergoing radiation and chemo, they get so sick, because the radiation and chemo kills their bone marrow, it kills their skin, makes them sick, it can kill them. Chemotherapy can kill the patient sometimes. Well, scientists have been able to genetically modify this organism and reprogram the virus to only attack the cancerous cells and the cells that are doing the trickery, and leave all the healthy cells intact. The GMO virus uses a protein to bind cancerous cells directly to immune cells, destroying the disease. How about that? Now, there's a GMO I can get into. I've always been fairly open to the idea of genetically modified organisms, and now I'm even more staunchly committed to supporting certain genetically modified organisms. Thank you very much. That is more reportage just from the world of immunotherapy in general. Scientists are decoding our immune system, and they're going to figure out ways to use a virus. People have always wondered, why are there viruses? Well, viruses can be functional. It's just that in our fallen state, the function has been replaced quite often by pathology. But we can figure it all out if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen and Marsha Fudge and Nancy Pelosi, Howard Stern. We will be able to use our own immune system and viruses and other things that already exist in nature to defeat all disease, I believe. So there, let's move on into the religion file. Another, this is straight out of the Bible. You know, not straight out of Compton, not straight out the trailer. This is straight out the Bible. That's right. A stone weight. This is according to the Times of Israel. A stone weight inscribed in ancient Hebrew script was discovered in rubble taken from excavations at the Western Wall. The stone weight is called a beka, and it's a half a shekel. The word Becca appears twice in the Old Testament, once in Genesis, once in Exodus, as a weight. And the Times of Israel quotes Exodus 38, one Becca per head, this is half a shekel, according to the shekel of the sanctuary. So there you go. So the Bible talks about this weight called a Becca, and everybody sneers and says the Bible is just a bunch of fairy tales. And what do they find buried in the dirt? A Becca. How about that? It's undeniable proof of the historicity of the Bible. Undeniable. But it will be denied. It is being denied. It has been denied. It will continue to be denied. And those of you who keep denying the undeniable, you will at the very least be less than sane. That's where you're going. By denying the undeniable, at the very least you'll be less than sane and mentally unhealthy. And that's at the very least, less than sane. At the worst, you'll become a sociopath, right? You'll become a homicidal, suicidal maniac. That's at the worst. That's where you go if you keep denying the undeniable. And that's just for a person becomes a sociopath. One person who continuously denies the undeniable. A homicidal, sociopathic, suicidal maniac. But what about a civilization? What about an entire nation? What about an entire civilization that denies the undeniable? And they now are on a pathway from somewhere less than sane. And that pathway shall be trod the full length to sociopathology, ending in an orgy of murder and suicide. That's where it leads. And that way is a wide path, that way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Indeed, that was for Nancy Pelosi and Marsha Fudge and all of them, all of you deniers. You know how to make an atheist really annoyed? Just suggest there's a God. And then suggest that not only is there a God, but there's really no alternative to there being a God. There just is no alternative. There's no logical alternative. Then just watch the sparks fly. All right, now let's move to the hard religion file. We go to Port Blair, India, where an American missionary, John Allen Chow, 27-year-old American Christian, has been killed by an island tribe that Channel News Asia reports that this island tribe is untouched by modern civilization. Untouched they are by modern civilization. Chow paddled his kayak toward the shore of this island where, he had in his boat, he had fish and a football. He had gifts, basically. He paddled ashore and he said he was shouting to them. He was shouting. Well, he wanted to convert them to Christianity. So he rose up to the island with gifts in his boat and he says, "My name is John. I love you. Jesus loves you. Here, have some fish." And then they killed him. They shot him with bows and arrows. And he was killed. Now, before his body was even buried, his family already posted up on social media forgiving them. They've already been forgiven by his family. They posted up, "We forgive those responsible for John's death." That's about right, huh? Anyway, but that's beside the point. Let me move on here. North Sentinel Island is about the size of Manhattan, and it's home to these North Sentinelese people, believed to number somewhere between a dozen and 150. They don't really know how many there are because everybody's scared to go there because every time someone goes there, they get killed by this tribe, okay? The tribe reportedly killed two fishermen whose boat drifted onto the island back in 2006. And they've even fired arrows at a helicopter that was checking in on them after the 2004 Indian tsunami. You remember the tsunami? Well, the Indian officials went to see if everybody was okay, and these guys start shooting at their helicopters with bow and arrow. And so, by the way, the British went there in the late 19th century, and they reported the population was around 8,000 of these Sentinelese people. Now it's down to somewhere around a dozen, maybe 150, but maybe only 12 or 15 people that have ever been observed. Foreigners and Indians are banned from going within 3 miles of the island. The Indian police... here's what the Indian... Now, these are the police. Now, this guy was murdered. Well, can we all agree on that? I mean, I've had people come to my house with a gift. You know, they've got the Watchtower magazine. They want to give it to me. Right. So anyway, I don't shoot them. It may be a little bit annoying, whatever. Maybe I don't want to hear what they have to say, but I haven't killed any of them. So this guy shows up with a football and some fish and they killed him. Well, the Indian police, they say, we have to take care that we must not disturb them or their habitat by any means. Why? What do you mean? They killed a guy. I mean, they killed two other guys back in 2006. What do you mean we don't want to disturb their habitat? These are not animals. This is not some endangered species. These are human beings. These are people. And here's the thing that I would say to the police and really anybody. I mean, if your reaction to, let's say, a visitor coming bearing gifts, or let's say a fisherman who's in distress, or rescuers who come to check on you after a tsunami, if your reaction is to shoot at them, then I believe any reasonable person would suspect that there is some sort of criminal activity occurring there on that island. And perhaps there are victims there, or slaves, or people imprisoned unjustly who are in need of rescue. No? Am I crazy? Somebody brings a football and some fish and you kill him? What are you up to? Now I want to know. And I'm going to find out if it's me, I'm not the Indian police. But instead, these godless, moronic Indians have practically elevated this tribe into a state unto themselves. Not only a state, but like a state above the law. It's just I can't comprehend it. Well, now they've killed an American. And so I don't care that the Indians have elevated them to this position that they've acquired above the law. They've murdered an American citizen. And so now I say they need to hear the gospel. They definitely need to hear the gospel, especially since I'm going to be sending the Marines. And they're going to personally introduce these guys to Jesus. So they definitely need to hear about him as soon as possible. I'm sorry. I know that we're afraid we're going to give them smallpox. Oh, they might catch the flu. Okay. Well, they murdered this guy. How about that? Doesn't that count for anything? This story is, to me, it's a symbol and a symptom. It's a symbol of a symptom of godlessness. You end up worshiping they're worshiping this culture of these ancient hunter-gatherers as if they're some sort of god. It's just totally bizarre. Completely bizarre. Anyway, I'm sure that the president doesn't have time to deal with it. But if it were me, I would make it a point to let everyone know that there is justice. And just because you're an ancient hunter-gatherer who's been isolated for whatever, I'm not going to worship your dirt. Forgive me. All right. Now, let's go to the Republican propaganda file, where we are winning. We're winning, folks. The Hill reports that the number of abortions in the United States dropped sharply from 2006 to 2015. 24% decrease in abortions. Folks, we're winning. 24% decline. I can hear the pro-life industry cranking up the presses to send out their "we're winning" fundraising letters. Here's what we did. Here's how we helped. Those letters are going to be flying out quoting this story. This story came out on Thursday. So by Tuesday, you should get a letter from Troy Newman citing this article and talking about all he's done to stop all these abortions. If you get one, please send me a copy. I'm off Troy's mailing list. I'm one of the few conservatives in the country who's found a way to get off Troy Newman's mailing list over there at Operation Rescue My Fundraising Operation. So when you dig down a little deeper into this report, by the way, this report came out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Am I running out of time? I'm running out of time. The CDC report says effective contraception can reduce unintended pregnancies and reduce the number of abortions performed in the United States. And there's better access to effective contraception. And by the way, what you may or may not know is that the over-the-counter morning after pill and the prescription emergency contraception, both which induce abortion before fetal implantation, both which induce abortion, are now considered contraception. And girls can go to Walgreens and buy the morning after pill without even telling their mom. And so, and this morning after pill and all these emergency contraceptions, they've all been, for all intents and purposes, they've been endorsed not only by Planned Parenthood, but by the pro-life industry, who seem to have retreated from away from the right to life to now merely objecting primarily to a, quote, late-term abortion, unquote. And objecting not only loud enough to fundraise, not to actually do anything to actually stop actual late-term abortion. We're winning. Send us a donation. We'll make sure Brett Kavanaugh overturns Roe versus Wade. It's disgusting. So the fact is, folks, surgical abortions are in decline. Surgical abortions. Chemical abortifacients are rising in popularity. And the killing machine is now even more clean, more socially acceptable, more subtle, and harder to see. And that's going to be very difficult to overcome, especially since about a third of all adult Americans of childbearing age have actually participated in the killing of an innocent person. All right. And so now I was going to do the domestic tranquility file, which is just overloaded with bloodshed, but I can't do it. Instead, I want to just end with something a little more lighthearted. I don't know if it is or not, and maybe I'm crazy, but I witnessed what I consider mass hysteria this past week. I've got an article here from WTNH Radio talking about how in Thanksgiving week, the CDC, the same CDC that says we're winning, abortion's down, the same CDC comes out and they say we have to throw away all the romaine lettuce in the whole country. I walked into the grocery store today. I felt like I was in a third world country. There's a whole section of the produce section that's empty. They said we should throw it all away, and we all did. We threw it all away. They said stores, people, restaurants have to throw it all away. I'm still wondering how did the restaurants in Austin deal with that? Because a few weeks ago, they banned restaurants in Austin from throwing away any food. So that must have really left them in a bind, number one. But I started reading it. 32 people were infected with E. coli from an unknown source suspected to be possibly romaine lettuce. The 32 people were spread out over 11 different states. Folks, I'm not an epidemiologist. But does 32 people in 11 states, does that count as an outbreak? I don't know. I mean, there are 50 states. There's 320 million people. So 32 out of 320 million, and that's 0.000000001. I'm not sure how you state that as a percentage. I think that is 1/10 of 1/1000th of 1%. I think. Now, I know that all 320 million people in America were not eating romaine lettuce simultaneously, right? But, I mean, let's run the numbers. Walk with me on this. The average American eats 4 pounds of romaine lettuce a year. There are 525,600 minutes in a year. It takes about 5 minutes to eat the average serving, meaning at any given moment in America, at any given moment, according to my numbers, there are approximately 45,625 people eating romaine lettuce. Okay, so 32 out of 45,625 is 0.0007. So less than one person in every 1,000 actively eating romaine lettuce actually got a stomach ache. And the government insisted that we throw away all the lettuce. And we did. We threw it all away.
I didn't.
Now here at the McBurney compound, we finished ours.
I still have them.
Oh, you still do?
Yeah, maybe I can
put that up on eBay. Put that, it's black market romaine. All right. I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know you were holding out on any romaine.
I'm growing more salmonella.
You don't hold on to it for too long. Was it salmonella? Was it E. coli? E. coli, yeah. Anyway, folks, so we all threw away the lettuce, and our grocery stores looked like Haiti, for crying out loud. Now, let's compare romaine lettuce and E. coli, the E. coli pandemic that frightened us all into throwing away our lettuce. Let's compare that to sexual immorality. Adultery and fornication are a causal factor in approximately 15% of all murders. And I'm not just making this up. This is based on Bureau of Justice statistics from the Family Violence Statistics Report. 20,000 people are murdered each year. 15%, around 3,200 of them are murdered. A causal factor was sexual immorality, adultery, fornication, things like that. It's a causal factor in 3,200 murders. So by run the math, 32 versus 3,200. Okay, so the epidemic is really of murder causally affected by a sexual immorality. That's the real, if there is an epidemic that we should be scared of and that the CDC should be focusing on, it should be the epidemic of sexual immorality related murders, far more virulent than the E. coli suspected to possibly maybe be in some of the romaine. But do we get a warning from the CDC on that? We do not get a warning about that. There's no warning about that. So I'm warning you here on the Weekly Worldview to flee sexual immorality, flee youthful lusts, and focus and meditate on that which is good and lovely and righteous and just and true. Does anybody even know how to meditate anymore? It's very difficult to meditate. There's very few places and times when we can meditate. But when you have a time and you're alone, just be still and meditate on God, our Creator. Just think about Him. Desire to know Him. Desire to know His works. Desire to know His words. And you will be able to flee from these lusts that lead to death and murder and bloodshed. So the CDC, they're not going to warn you. But you are without excuse because I have warned you. And so now you know. And so I feel like I should just end with that. Or should I do something about the ignorant pagans? Let's do the ignorant pagans real quick. It is from The Guardian in London, which I hate to even quote. But here's how the article opens. You might think very few people are blessed with supernatural interspecies communication abilities. Really, I might think few people are blessed with that? Okay. I might think nobody, but hey, the story is about pet psychics. Pet psychics who possess a supernatural interspecies communications ability. They charge $150 for a half hour over the phone with your pet. $200 if it's an emergency, $260 an hour for an in-home reading. They'll actually come in and interview your pet in person. Now, the executive director of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, now that's a real group. They work on training dogs. They warn that there's no scientifically verified evidence that pet psychics are based on anything more than faith, they say. Ah! And folks, this is why this article is in The Guardian, which is a godless rag that run by a pile of deviants and perverts. The reason this article is in their paper is to denigrate the idea of faith as unscientific. They have a little fun with the pet psychic angle, but what they really want to do is plant the idea that faith is unscientific. That's their main goal. And I caught them in it. Because Hebrews tells us that faith is the evidence of things not seen. Right? And it goes on to say, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God so that the things seen were not made of things that are visible. So just meditate on that for a little while. That was before modern science, before we had microscopes any of that, the Bible said that the things that are made are not made of things that are visible. And so that faith, ladies and gentlemen, that is the evidence of things not seen, has been proven true, even by the scientific method. Even in the modern world, the scripture stands as undeniable. Go back to the research on Sodom and Gomorrah. Go back to the Becca that they found. The Guardian is filled with fools who hold fast to an irrational denial of the undeniable. Hence, they entertain the promotion of pet psychics and other charlatans and their tales and the idea that faith is not scientific and therefore they are a social pathology there at The Guardian. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at American Right to Life, and my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.